If you know the Lubin Brothers, it's probably because the late Gram Parsons and Emmy Lou Harris promoted their music in the 70s. Charlie Lubin and his brother Ira sung some of the most gorgeous country music harmonies ever. They sang both gospel and secular music from 1948 to 1963 when they broke up because of Ira's out-of-control drinking. Ira, the older Lubin, died in 1965 in a car crash. Charlie Lubin has a new album. It's his first in a decade, and we are glad to welcome him and his band. And we'll start off with this performance of Something to Brag About.
I got a real important job in a large office building. Lord, I ride them people in an elevator. And I drive a 57 Chevrolet with busted taillights, burnout valves, and a leaky radiator. I wear a $20 suit I bought from J.C. Penney back in 62. But I got something to brag about, something to brag about, that's something to brag about in you. Oh, Lee.
I'm a short order cook at an all-night cafe down on 18th Avenue and 12th Street. I wear a swinging mini dress that I made for myself from mama's kitchen curtains and old bed sheets. I've got 17 pages of top value stamps and one old pair of shoes. But I've got something to brag about, something to brag about, something to brag about in you. When you're with the feathers, I know you start bragging about my hourglass figure and my big blue eyes.
Yeah, you tell all your girlfriends about my good, good loving. That's one pleasure money can't buy. Lord, let's get married in the not too distant future. We'll rent a little flat on 29th Street. You know we'll hang out washing clothesline from the window. We'll feast on cornbread, butter, beans, and lunch meat.
Now
we won't have a thermostat, a big long Cadillac, but we'll have a love that's true. And I'll have something to brag
and
about.
I'll have something to brag about.
Something to brag about in you.
I told you we were going to have some fun. Something to brag about, starting things off today, is Charlie Lubin and his great band have joined us today. Charlie, how did this album come about? How did this new album come about? Because it's your first in a while, almost a decade, I guess.
Well, I've had several, David, independent label things that weren't distributed or anything. But about a fraction over a year ago, I was sitting in my living room at home, and Josh Rosenthal called me and said, I caught your show in Albany, New York last year, and I liked it, and I came back home, checked you out. And he told me how long it had been since I had a international release, and I said, well, you've done your homework. And I didn't know what was coming next, and then he said, how would you like to be on my label? Josh actually chose the material to go in this CD.
Well, he did. You had to sign off on it. He did a pretty good job of picking things that from your past with your brother and your. I mean, there's Delmore Brothers tunes. There's all kinds of things on here.
Well, he knew that I am a big Delmore Brother fan. Have been all my life, and we like the Blue Sky Boys, but we didn't get any of their material. But we got Carter Family, Delmore Brothers, and some Lubin Brothers.
Now, I want to talk a little. I mean, I want to pick your brain about so many things, but I want to talk a little bit about the style of harmony you and your brother sang. I've heard it referred to as shape note singing, which comes out of the church. Could you explain what that's all about?
Well, shape notes is a better name, sacred harp, and it's very prevalent in Alabama. Still exists. My mama's mother was a Haynes. And they started a reunion, and last year I went, it was the 112th Haynes reunion.
Wow.
They have lots of good singing, and then they got dinner on the ground. It's not really on the ground, you know, they got a bench, but the old saying, dinner on the ground, whiskey in the bushes, and the devil all around. But they sing about 3 or 4 hours, and then they break for lunch, or dinner, I call it. And then they go back in and sing 3 or 4 more hours and break up.
Now, did you and your brother shape your harmonies after the shape note singing or after people like the Delmores?
No, we singing-wise, we wasn't close to the Delmores, but we heard a lot of stuff at those singings. You know, they have five-part harmony, not just four.
Wow.
And one of the girls would do the what they call the alto part, and that intrigued my brother. A lot of times he would use that part instead of first tenor because people would ask him, what is that? What are you doing? And he said, well, you don't like it? I said, no, I didn't say that. I just want to know what it is. And he said, I don't know what it is, but I thought it'd work, so I threw it in there. But we learned a lot from listening to those folks sing.
Well, that would explain why I heard the story that Emmylou Harris, when she heard you and your brother sing for the first time, said, who's the girl singing up on top? He was singing the alto part.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, my brother had I'm sure he had a falsetto. He never did have to use it because I never did sing high enough to force him to go falsetto, but he could sing awful high.
If I cry when I kiss you, when we say goodbye, don't laugh, don't laugh. If I say I've always loved you and I will till I die, don't laugh, don't laugh. I could never find another, there's no use for me to try. I beg of you, my darling, please don't laugh if I cry. If I say I've always loved you and I will till I die, don't laugh, don't laugh.
One of the biggest hurdles for you guys, for the Lubin brothers to get over, was to get hired by the Opry. Was that tough at the time? Because you guys were doing fairly well, I thought.
We were doing quite well in gospel music.
Oh, okay.
But I suppose we had auditioned, but we auditioned to the wrong man. We were auditioning to Jim Denny. Somebody told us he's the boss, but he was just a stage manager. He couldn't hire or fire. And we was in Birmingham after I got back from Korea, and we went to Birmingham, Marin, darn near starved to death down there. And we was going to quit the business if we couldn't get on the Opry. That was our plan. And so I said, let me call Ken Nelson. We'd never bugged him. He was our producer, A&R man. And I called him. I said, do you know anybody at the Opry? Well, he said, I know Jack Stapp. That was the boss. And I said, well, Larry and I are going to hang it up if we can't get on the Opry. And I thought maybe you might could help. So he said, I'll call you back. Give me your number. And I said, I'm at a payphone on the street, and I'll stay here till you call back. So he called up Jack Stapp, and I don't know what Jack Stapp said after Ken said, I've got a duet on my label that I would like to have on the Opry. And then Jack said something, and Kent said, if you don't want them, the Ozark Jubilee does. And Jack said, we don't need anybody else slipping off to Springfield, so just tell them they're on this Friday night. That was on a Tuesday. So we were never guests on the Opry or anything until we became members.
Well, you want to do something that's on this? You maybe do the Delmore Brothers tune, or what are you thinking of?
The one we chose in this slot is a Jimmy Rogers song.
Great.
This takes you back. Actually, this was recorded the year that I was born. This particular song recorded
1927
in the Big Apple in 1927. So we'll try it for you.
Waiting for a train. All around the water tank, waiting for a train. 1,000 miles away from home, sleeping in the rain. I walked up to the brakeman,
to give him a line of talk. He said, if you've got money, I'll see that you don't walk. But I haven't got a nickel, not a penny can I show. He said, get off, you railroad bum. Then he slammed the boxcar door. Lord-a-lay, hey, hey. Then he put me off in Texas, a state I dearly love. The wide open spaces around me, the moon, the stars up above. But nobody here seems to want me or lend me a helping hand. So I'm on my way from Frisco, going back to Dixieland. And my pocketbook is empty, my heart is filled with pain, 'cause I'm 1,000 miles away from home, waiting for a train. Yodel-ay, ay, ay. Pretty bad train whistle, wasn't it, David?
But pretty good yodeling brakeman, though. I like that. Charlie Louvin's doing the singing today with this this great band. That's one you'll find on this this new release.
Let's do this thing right, David. That's Diane Berry on the girl that you hear singing, and Bill Kelly doing the third part, picking the guitar. I might have heard A.P. Carter in there just a little. That would have been Brent Wilson on the end over there. And Kevin Cathy is on the tub.
The single drum, the way they would do it on the Opry, right? You only get one drum.
Well, in days of old, yeah. But they use a full set now.
Right.
The Opry has gone rock and roll officially.
Throughout your career, you of course originally sang gospel and then started singing more secular songs. Was that a problem? Was that a problem at the time? Did the gospel community, how did they feel about that?
Well, we didn't get a chance to ask many of them, but the gospel people really didn't like us, so they just had a piano in the quartet, you know, and we were, as they mentioned, we were a carnival act.
Because you were a string, because you had guitar?
Oh. Right. They just never did read the book. Our strings is mentioned in that book, but they didn't really take to us too good, so... And on our road shows, we did a mixture of shows, supposedly funny songs, love songs, and gospel songs. And that's what we wanted to do on record. And finally talked them into that, and we came with When I Stopped Dreaming as our first secular tune for Capitol.
When I stop dreaming.
And that didn't fare too badly, so.
Well, it's probably the most remembered song of all the Louvin Brothers songs.
But when you go out and do a show now, what's the most requested? Because I heard you mention in Knoxville Girl, something you can't get away without doing.
That's it.
Really?
The Knoxville Girl was, even when we had a number one record on I Don't Believe You've Met My Baby, we go do a program. And the third song, by the time you got through doing the third song, somebody in the audience would holler for the Knoxville Girl. And you couldn't get by without doing the Knoxville Girl on each show. Hmm. It's a gruesome piece of literature, isn't it?
Well, let me try that. Knoxville Girl. Is it going to work?
Wow. We can do anything. If you want to hear some Knoxville,
I'd love to.
It's an E card. It's actually we're changing the schedule just a little bit, but we're very adaptable in this little aggregation. Lord, I met a little girl in Knoxville, in the town we all know well. Every Sunday evening out in her home I dwell. We went to take an evening walk about a mile from town, and I picked the stick up off the ground and knocked that fair girl down. She fell down on her bended knees, for mercy she did cry. Oh, Willie dear, don't kill me here, I'm unprepared to die. She never spoke another word, I only beat her more, until the ground around me within her blood did flow. Then I took her by her golden curls, and I drug her round and round, throwing her into the river that flows through Knoxville town. Go down, Knoxville girl with the dark and roving eyes. Go down, you Knoxville girl, you could never be my bride. Then I started back to Knoxville, got there about midnight. My mama, she was worried and woke up in a fright, saying, dear son, what have you done to bloody your clothes so? And I told my nosy mother I was bleeding at my nose. Back then, David, crime wasn't near as profitable as it is today, so I'm going to skip part of the song. I'll just sing you the Dick Tracy part of it, the last verse. They carried me down to Knoxville, put me in a cell, and my friends all tried to get me out, but none could go my bail. So I'm here to waste my life away down in this dirty old jail, because I murdered that Knoxville girl, the girl I love so. That's a killer, David.
Literally and in every way. That's Charlie Louvin doing Knoxville Girl. Thanks for that. People don't usually do my requests, but I appreciate that. Makes me feel better. You know, there's so many things I want to talk to you about. There's a couple of stories that I've heard you tell, and one of them I think might be, it's always interesting to me, is when you and your brother were starting out, you were somewhere in Arkansas, and a teenage Johnny Cash came to your show. How did you figure out it was Johnny Cash when he became Johnny Cash?
Well, if you are a Johnny Cash fan as I am, you probably read The Man in Black, his book. And he donated 3 pages in that book to that incident. But it was my job with the Smiling Eddie show, other than singing with Ari, my job was selling tickets. So we got there a little late, 15 minutes late, And I asked this kid standing outside the door. He was barefooted in overalls with no shirt on and bareheaded. A horrible, beautiful tan he had. It was kind of the end of the summer. And I asked him if he had, if there was a restroom, and he just practically led me out yonder, outhouse out in the field. And when I came out, I reached in my pocket, and I don't know where I got them at, but I had two soda crackers. And I broke them open and started eating them, and he said, "Why are you eating the soda crackers?" And I'm sure that there was a smart aleck answer I gave him. I said, "To keep from starving to death." And he came back, and I said, "Come in and sit down." And he said, "Now, I'm waiting on friends." Well, I knew the kid didn't have any money. You could look at him. And I said, "Well, come in and sit right here, and when your friends get here, you can see them." So he came in and sat through the show. And then we packed up, and as we pulled away from the school, there one little light burning outside the gymnasium door. And this kid was standing under it. So he waved at the car. And I happened to be looking, and I ran the back window down and waved back. He said that had the same effects on him as if he were standing by the railroad track. And he gave the engineer the pull the throttle sign, and so, and he actually blew the whistle for me. That's how thrilling it was. And also, John got fired because of us. He, back in the old days, you're old enough to remember this, when you could turn your radio on in your car without the switch being on. Well, he turned the radio. He was a water boy, and he turned the radio on this guy's truck and listened to a program that we did in Memphis, and then it was time to carry the water, and he forgot to turn the radio off. And by evening time, the man's battery was dead, and he got caught and fired.
And it's all your fault.
Well, not really. I'm sorry he got fired, but I didn't have nothing to do with it.
And so, how did he recall that in the Man in Black?
He recorded it precisely like it happened.
Wow, that's great.
He was a I called him a friend, and I hope he felt the same way.
Charlie Leuven is our guest today on the cafe, and what do you have on your schedule? I'm not gonna mess you up this time.
This time it's a true Delmore song.
All right.
This is a song that I heard as a kid. You know, the Delmore Brothers was, is, and will always be the hottest duet to ever be on the Grand Ole Opry, and it was in the 30s when we had nothing but radio. And they were a beautiful act. Blues, stay away from me. Blues, why don't you let me be? Don't know why you keep on haunting me. You know love was never meant for me. Lord, true love was never meant for me. Cause it seems somehow I never can be free. Jealous, blue. You keep on haunting me. Haunt me with that guitar, Bill. Full of misery and tears. I can't see. It seems somehow that I ain't gonna never be free. Keep on haunting me.
Blues Stay Away From Me. There you go. There's the Delmore Brothers tune. It's Charlie Lubin is playing live for us today on the cafe. I was reading about a tour you did in the 90s with Cheap Trick and Cake and some other people. What was that like? Was that fun?
It's unbelievably. I was scared stiff on what I would hear. You know, I figured that you're going to walk out in front of 10,000 rock and roll fans, and they're going to tell you to get that redneck crap off of the stage. And we bought tickets to hear rock and roll, but that didn't happen. I got good welcomes wherever we went. People knew what I was singing. John McRae is a Lubin Brother fan, and he and I sang two or three together.
Oh, that's great.
And before the tour was half over, I was helping Cheap Trick sing I'm a California Man.
That's great.
But they're all good guys. I've never met really but one or two stuck-up good singers, musicians, what. You know, basically, everybody came up the hard way and went to the School of Knox. And so we all, if you shake a sack, well, you don't know who comes out first.
Charlie Lubin is our guest today on the cafe. And, you know, there's a younger generation of folks who work around here, and I was kind of just trying to describe your career and where it all came from. And I said, people, you have to understand that Elvis Presley opened for the Lubin Brothers. But I understand that was a Hank Snow show, or was that your show, or how did that work out?
Well, we were pretty warm at the time.
I'll bet.
And Mr. Parker needed somebody to get the people in the building. And they didn't really, and I didn't either. I didn't know what Elvis was doing there at first. You know, I thought he was a fad. Huh. Most people thought that Elvis was just a fad. It would go away, but my wife is from Memphis, so we was on a visit once and carried Elvis's mother one of the Lubin gospel albums. She loved those. And I seen a woman older than my mother out on her knees outside the fence in the front of Elvis's house, reaching through, picking grass like a goat, saving that grass to take it back home and show people, you know, be like carrying a glass of water saying, Elvis drank out of this cup. But she was actually pulling grass and saving it. And I knew then it wasn't a fad. It caught on.
Now, did as rock and roll broke in the 50s, was that tough for the Lubins?
Well, we got through it. We just stuck to our guns at that time. But a lot of people put out of business, David. It killed Webb Pierce and Carl Smith. They never recorded again. Elvis changed the entire music industry in it. But country always comes back. It's gotten sick. Had to go to bed, but somebody will doctor it, and it always comes back. There'll always be country music.
Last night, my dear, the rain was falling.
I went to bed so sad and blue.
Then I had a dream of you.
Underneath the harvest moon,
I was thinking about you, and then you met me in the moonlight.
The stars were shining in your eyes.
There's the harmonies of the Leuven Brothers, and I don't believe you've met my baby. Our thanks again to Charlie Leuven for being our guest today on the World Cafe.